another episode of Tabletop Crowd. I am here with another bonus episode for October to talk with a fantastic designer about his upcoming spooky game Kickstarter. The game is Our Haunt, which is a narrative RPG about an old house and the ghosts that have found family inside. So Jamie, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners and then let us know a little bit about the project?
Yeah. So hello, hello, everybody. Kristen, thank you so much for having me. My name is Jamie. I should say my full name, right? So, So I'm Jamila Arnajadi. Wow, it feels so formal to say that. I feel like I'm back in school. So you can call me Jamie. My pronouns are he, they. And yeah, I'm a game designer. I love to make games. I love TTRPGs. I often say, I feel like TTRPGs have saved my life. I absolutely love them. And I endeavor to be one of the many cheery himbos in the TTRPG space, here to support everybody. We can have a fun time and game and yeah, just have fun making games, basically. That's what I'm here for.
Awesome. And even though Jamie and I know each other in real life, I have not heard much about this project. So I'm so excited. So Jamie, tell us, what is Our Haunt all about?
Yeah, so Our Haunt is a game where you get to play as a ghost, right, in this haunted old mansion. And it's really a game about found family. It has a lot of clear themes in terms of like emotional connection. And the idea is that these ghosts in this haunt, they don't remember much about their lives before they died. Right. And so when you create a character, you choose from a list of like fragmented memories that you still have. And it's up to you, like how much, what these memories mean, basically, when you put them together, because you can choose a number of memories. And it is based on the belonging outside belonging system, which I'll be happy to talk about later, but it's very rules light. It's the kind of game where it's easy to pick up and play, but it does take some time to really master, because there are a lot of things you can draw upon narratively through the mechanics, but they're all very simple. I have to stress it's very simple, but it's basically a game where you all take turns telling a story together about what it's like being in this haunted house. And as part of the process, you pick a room. So that's a new thing with the second edition, which I feel like I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about like the first and second edition, but basically you also choose a room that you're most comfortable in, and that is your space. So whenever the story enters that room, you take the turn being the guide for the story during that time. And so, for example, when you play the game, you can choose to be the doll, and the room that you're most comfortable in could be the attic or it could be the basement. And yeah, and everybody gets to choose the ghost that they are, the room that they haunt in, and we just tell these stories together. And so as you play the game, you have the option later to gain a memory. So you can either remember a memory from, regain a memory from before you died, right? Or you can choose to create a new memory that's based on your time here and now with each other. So yeah, so basically that's the overall structure of Our Haunt. That is the creative playground. And it's both cozy and it's creepy, and it's up to you based on the choices you make when you're making the character and choosing the room and making the room, how cozy you want it to be and how scary you want it to be. Like, it can go really scary if you want to, but it can also stick to really cozy. I personally like it when the game is like a little bit of both, right? Where you shift back and forth. But yeah, so that's Our Haunt.
Wow. Okay. That sounds really exciting. And I have a lot of questions, all good things. So let's see where to start first. I think the system.
Right. So it's called the Belonging Outside Belonging System, okay, lovingly abbreviated to BOB. But yeah, so it is lovingly abbreviated to BOB, basically. So I like to say the whole thing, Belong As I Belong. It's also known as the No Dice, No Masters system, because you don't use dice and there is no one game master, basically. So basically, Belonging Outside Belonging was developed by both Avery Alder and Benjamin Rosenbaum in Dream Askew, Dream Apart. So that was like the first finalized game that showcased the system, and it's absolutely amazing. And it's so cool how it started from Apocalypse World and then it became its own thing. The entire process is amazing. Avery has talked about it before, and I just love the story so much and how she really redesigned a game that would be easy for people to pick up and play, that would really focus on story, that there wasn't as much pressure on who would be GMing the game. And yeah, there's a lot to love about the system. I have made several games using that system as I keep exploring. I feel like we're just at the beginning of understanding what the system is capable of. So our haunt is definitely like the most recent version of my personal exploration within the Belonging Outside Belonging system. And I think another great example is Wander Home by Jay Dragon is another wonderful example of where the system can go, what you can push against, and what you can borrow from other systems. So basically our haunt is that. I really just, actually, when I first made this game, it was for an Itch.io game jam, which was a Belonging Outside Belonging game jam. And so when they said you can make any game, as long as it's Belonging Outside Belonging, my brain went to sad ghosts who don't have all their memories hanging out in a haunted house. That's where my brain went.
Of course it did.
Yeah. So it was the very first BOB game I made. And then, so I'm really excited about it. After having making all these other ones, I get to come back to our haunt and bring about the second edition before it gets published through Possum Creek Games. It's such a dream. So I'm really happy about it.
That sounds great. I wasn't even aware that there was a first edition. Can we talk a little bit about, and we don't have to go into too much of the differences between first and second if you don't want to, but maybe one or two of the changes that you're most excited about in this edition.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you limited me because we can be here all day. I talk about game design all day. My poor partner has to put up with so much, my poor friends. Anyway, so the main things I'm excited about is I learned a lot in terms of moves. So usually in Belonging Outside Belonging, each playbook comes with a set of moves. They're not the same as Powered by the Apocalypse moves. They're very simple. So for example, the moves are broken into strong moves, neutral moves, and vulnerable moves in this game anyway. And I really learned a lot. So basically, for example, I'm going to just pull up a few moves. You get to play a cat if you want to. And the cat can be a ghost cat, or it can be a cat that used to be a human, or it could just be a cat. It's completely up to you. The cat just has ghostly abilities like every playbook does, but I like to think even normal cats have that. So if you want to play a normal cat that has ghostly abilities, you know, you can. And basically some of the moves. So for example, one of the strong moves is ensnare someone with your unblinking gaze, a very cat-like thing. A neutral move, one of the neutral moves is avoid speaking by licking yourself clean. And one of the vulnerable moves are, for example, here, reach out and show how much you care, right? And so the combination of moves, basically there's a token economy. So when you make a vulnerable move, you gain a token. And in order to do one of your strong moves, you need to spend two tokens. So there's this narrative flow. And this is where the No Dice, No Masters comes in, because it is up to you when you are vulnerable and it's up to you when your character is strong. It's not up to the dice, right? Okay. So
yeah.
And then the neutral moves are just things you can do at any time, right? If you're not sure what to do with the character, you can do one of these things. And so one of the major changes was I changed not all, but a lot of the moves, because I've really learned over time, over making so many games, there's an art that I'm still mastering, right? There is an art to creating a move that is enough poetry that can inspire someone, that can spark the intuition, but isn't too specific that they can't apply it to any moment, but is not too open that it's meaningless. Like there's just like, there's this way that you're trying to, it's like a balancing act, right? Like on a tightrope. So I really had fun reestablishing those moves. And Another thing I'm really excited, this is what I'm super excited about. So is the addition of the rooms, which wasn't there before. So before, most BOB games have things called setting elements, which is kind of like agendas of a GM broken down but shared with everyone. Mm-hmm. And those can work really well. But in my experience, I noticed that belonging outside, and I want to stress this is my personal experience, right? I can't speak for how the game plays all the time with everybody. But for me, I had such a hard time at first playing Dream Askew because I have my veteran TTRPG brain, right? And when I was told it's a GM-less game, all of us were just sort of staring at each other like, so there's no GM. What's happening? Right? Yeah. And I think I personally prefer the idea of GM full, where everybody is a GM. That made more sense to me. I understand, you know, it's semantics, and but you know, that's what it makes sense to me. And so from there, I also noticed that no matter how compelling or how much I rewrote the setting elements for some games, it was just hard for a player to pick them up, especially if they were used to a GM and they were not the GM usually. Mm-hmm. They have such a hard time stepping up and taking that role. And so they would just often keep disappearing over and over again in the background. And belonging outside belonging is very dependent on how much of yourself you put into the narrative, mm-hmm. right? So what I experimented with another game called Brinkwood Refuge was, I was like, well, if you have a physical space and you own this space, right? Doesn't that tell you this is when you were the GM, right? I just wanted to, you know, instead of having at the start of each scene, hey, do you want to be the GM? You should be the GM. Yeah, let's be the GM. You should right. be the GM. So just to remove that conversation, it's just the moment you say, if the story takes place in this particular physical space, then this person becomes a GM because this place belongs to them, right? So I decided to bring that into Our Haunt too, because it works so well for Brinkwood Refuge. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would make more sense. Like, this is your haunted old house and this mansion, and you're kind of like these misfit ghosts and you own this place. It'd be really cool to have your own little rooms. So that was super fun. And the rooms you can choose from, I had so much fun coming up with the room. So there's
that.
Yeah, yeah. And I spent a lot of time looking at haunted houses on Pinterest to come up with ideas. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's so funny. I love horror themes and I love reading horror and I love playing horror. I don't like watching horror. Like, it's a completely different thing. But yeah, so
I stayed away from horror games for a long time because mm-hmm, I can't watch mm-hmm. a lot of horror.
Right.
Games. I can dip yeah. my toe in horror. Like, yeah. So I stayed relate, away relate. From horror games for a long time. And then I realized I can play horror games no problem because my yeah. mind can turn off at certain points, the visuals.
Yeah, yeah exactly. Horror which you can't do when you're watching.
Me. Yes.
So you're completely passive and you're just forced along for the ride. Yeah.
I honestly assumed you liked horror movies, and it's so refreshing to hear someone else who really likes horror in the
yeah.
genre, but can't watch it. That's me. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Cause I love Bluebeard's Bride. I love all these horror games, and Kristen, yeah. we play together. So, you know, I bring in body horror all the
yes,
time.
And it's the games. Best body horror. I'm here for it all the time.
Right. Cause it's so different, body horror in a shared narrative space, mm-hmm. right. Compared to when yes. it's body horror on a screen.
Absolutely.
I find like it's very different things. So,
then, cause I know you seem to be, you really like to do research, which shows in how wonderful your games turn out. So then how did you like do research or immerse yourself in Haunted yeah, Mansions for this one. Game?
Yeah. Right, right. So there are two main inspirations that always make people laugh. So the first one is Guillermo del Toro's house. Like when, I don't know if you've seen his house, but I'm like, I don't know if I want this to be my house, but if I was really rich, I want it to be my second house. Right.
Okay.
So he's basically, it's like a museum and he has all these props from all these movies and all these horror things. And it's absolutely gorgeous because Guillermo del Toro's aesthetic is like, and this house is over the top. Right. So even with the first edition, several of the options I wrote were just like from Guillermo del Toro's house. Right. And so for this version, I just drew more upon it. Like right. it's so, if you can look for the videos, I really highly recommend it. It's gorgeous.
Yes. Yeah. Listeners, don't do this if you're driving, but when you get to a safe space, if you can Google Guillermo del Toro's house, it's a sight.
Isn't it?
Wow. Is Isn't that a it? Huge Frankenstein head hanging from a banister?
Yeah. yeah
okay.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
can do this all day. Okay. I see some inspiration here.
Right. Right. And it's so beautiful. It's so eclectic. It's so gorgeous, but it comes together somehow, even though it's so over the top. Right. So that was one of my inspirations when I was working in the rooms and working at the game in general. And then the second inspiration, especially for the second edition, was the Beetlejuice movie, right? So, right, because the Beetlejuice movie, it's about scary things and death and ghosts, but it's not a horror film, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's too, so I was watching a lot of those where like I was watching different anime and different shows and different films where there were scary elements, but it wasn't a horror. Because the thing with like most horror films is there are no real relationships that form mm-hmm. because people are going to die, right? Like you're waiting for the final girl or something similar. So basically Our Haunt really prioritizes and focuses on close relationships. That's such an important part of the queer aspect of the game, the found mm-hmm. family. So I really focused on watching or consuming media that was more related to those things. So mm-hmm. what comes to mind, for example, is Death Parade, the anime, which sort of has that element. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and a few other things that really just helped me get to the core of these families merging and connecting and becoming, right? And so that's what I really drew upon. And it's something that's very natural to me too, as a queer person. As much as I love my family, it's very hard to be fully seen or accepted. Mm-hmm. My family does their best, but I'm still like an incredibly queer person and mm-hmm. most of them are not. So found family has meant so much to me, and that's why it shows up so often in my games.
I feel like that's a really important element as a whole in the queer community. And I'm also a queer person, but I don't mean to speak for the community as a whole. I have noticed in my experience in gaming that found family seems to be an important theme. And I love it. I love playing games where that found family or relationship building is like a key component. It's so, it just makes the storytelling so much richer and you get to bring in the emotions and I love it. Can you talk a little bit about how that found family plays a role? Like, are all these characters becoming a family? Were they a family in real life? Like, what does that look like? Or at least as much as you can share now.
Oh yeah. In terms of how much of they are a family, that's really up to the players. Like I find what they usually like to do as they uncover or they discover more memories is they start to say, oh, we were sisters and we didn't know it, right? There tends to be that sort of, because there is an element of mystery to each playbook and it's written out. Like, so for example, the doll playbook is you are a ghost that wakes up in the body of a doll, right? And so one of the tips, because each playbook comes with a tip, like if you're lost, you're not sure how to role play the character or where to go in the story with the character, then one of the tips is find out how you were put into this doll body or leave that mystery behind. And so each playbook has find out blank or leave that mystery behind, right? Like the betrayed, which is like the quintessential angry, ready to, are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yes.
Okay. Are we ready to fuck shit up playbook? Right? Mm-hmm. So basically like the really angry ghost, like that vengeful ghost is the betrayed. And so their tip is find out who wronged you and destroy them or leave that mystery behind. But basically, so that tends to be a more natural thing. Like as players remember, they tend to form those connections. But mainly what I did is each playbook, and this is a new thing that's only present in the second edition because I got better at designing intention into the experience, right? So in the second version, each playbook has a similar move, which starts with reach out and blank, right? So the cat has, like I described earlier, reach out and show how much you care. The doll has reach out and take care of another. The betrayed, who is all angry and full of resentment and full of vengeance, one of their vulnerable moves is reach out and hold another's pain as your own, right? So it's not only just about their pain, it's about learning how to hold someone else's. And yeah, so each one has a move like that, reach out and blank, which is supposed to help with that connection of found family. And then the last question, the last move, which is in the form of a question that every playbook has, is exactly the same, which is ask, can you tell me about one of your memories?
Oh,
right. And then like so it sort of, it sort of builds this moment between the characters. And then another way that found family happens is every time a ghost regains a memory, it is something. It is a set of tokens that you can, so right, I said earlier, you make vulnerable moves in order to gain tokens. Right. At the end of each session, you decide how many of those tokens are you going to invest into regaining a memory or creating a memory? And it costs 10 tokens, right?
Okay.
And so it should take like a session or two before you can regain or create a memory.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, when it fills up, then you decide as a group, who is the one who regains or creates the memory, right? And so that's another way that the found family forms. And if you regain a memory, all the regaining a memory stuff is super sad and super, and it's based on my own memories because I have temporal lobe epilepsy. So my memories are not the best. Like I've had seizures over the years that have removed a lot of my memories or really weakened them to the point where like I can only like my memories sometimes feel like animated GIFs, right? It's just like a moment.
Right.
Or if I have a long memory, it's very, very sketchy. If I have a very detailed memory, it's very, very short. Right. And yeah. So a lot of that from our haunt is based on my perception of memory. And I have to stress, I didn't realize how that was not the case for everybody until I started to talk to other people who were neurodivergent or who had trauma or had other things. And I realized they had memories like mine. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you regain an old memory, it can sound like here are some examples, a book wrapped in ribbon, blood wet on the pages. It didn't have to be this way. And another one is a long walk in the dark, the sound of a gun reloading. I'll always re-love you. I'll always love you. Oh. So it's always like these weird like moments.
Right.
And it's up to you to like say what happened.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I was gonna say the best thing about that is that every player, depending on like their experience and their personality and their emotion in that moment, is going to take that, those snippets, and make something different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. Like that last one I just talked about, the sound of a gun reloading, I'll always love you. Every time someone has picked that, they have interpreted it differently. Like sometimes they're the ones reloading the gun. Sometimes it's someone else. Ooh. Sometimes it's words that are said out loud. Sometimes it's just thought. Right. So it's very cool. So,
yeah.
And I love this as a designer. Like I love trying to figure out what can I write that's just enough to inspire in a really big way. Right. I really want people to be gripped by inspiration, but I really want it to make it their own because I trust in the players and I trust in people and their imagination and their creativity. So how can I tap into that? Right. It's so much fun trying to figure that out as a designer. So that's if you regain a memory, but if you create a memory, it's more detailed and it's more sweet, right? Because you're focused. So that's where the found family comes in.
Right.
So for example, one of the memories you can create is an old pile of bones came to life and started singing. We sang along. What was the song about? Right. And another one is we played in the kitchen pretending to eat and clean up afterwards. What did we celebrate? Oh. So it's like all these like, and I think that's also speaks to the queer experience where are you going to focus on your sad memories in the past? Or are you just going to create happier ones with this new family that you have? Right. And so that's really, that was so important to me. And both are valid, right? I think
absolutely,
both are good things, right? We do need to connect to the past or face the past as much as we need to and bring closure in some way, but we also need to focus on the present and create new memories and new experiences to build from, right? And I really wanted our haunt to embody both of those aspects and feel along that spectrum between those two spaces and where their character fits in as a family, right? Because once again, you regain the memories or create the memories, but everyone decides after they, and anyone can invest tokens. So they'll be like, I'll invest one, I'll have two tokens, I'll put in three. And then when you finally hit the 10, then you decide, well, which among us should have it? Right. And so that's a really nice, like, oh, you know, we focus on your character a lot. So I think it makes sense that your character gets the memory. Another time it's like, well, we haven't seen your character a lot. And I'd love to have this moment for you. So why don't you get the memory? And so it's a very sweet thing that happens on a meta level and also on a narrative level that I really like.
Yeah. I really like that. Cause if you can make things happen sometimes on a meta level, it just makes the game that much richer, right? Because the players are connected, so then your characters are going to be more connected.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
I love that.
Sometimes, Winning a game isn't about dealing the most damage, or drawing the most cards, or making any measurable contribution towards victory. But hey, just because you don't have the stats doesn't mean you're not a f***ing gamer god, alright? Enter The Intangibles, a podcast on the Geekspective Network, where me, Kenny, and my brother Matt break down all the things that are hard to quantify in games. All kinds of games. We're talking classics like Sonic's the Hedgehogs, and chess, and 3D Pinball Space Cadet. Great game, by the way. We're talking new releases like
insert latest trending games on Twitch here.
Single player, co-op, competitive, card games, board games, role-playing games, play-by-mail games, the wakes. We do deep dives into our favorite games, digging into the intangibles that make them great and the intangibles that will make you a better player, and hey, maybe even a better person. Check out The Intangibles on whatever the heck platform you're listening to right now.
So the playbooks, I'm super curious. I heard Doll, Betrayed, right? Is it Betrayed Ghost?
Yeah, which, that's right. The Betrayed.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you could just pick any of the amazing ghost NPCs you've created for our Blades in the Dark game for inspiration.
That's right. That's true. They're all the Betrayed.
And the Cat. Can you share what the other playbooks are?
Yeah, so we also have the Loved, and the Loved is really interesting because they're the ones who appear the most human and alive compared to all the others. And so their playbook is about being loved or seeking out love and beauty and the connection of those things. And then there's also the Faceless, which is a ghost that is barely there anymore. Like they don't even have a form, they don't have a face. In fact, one of their strong moves that you have to spend 2 tokens to do is become physical and real for now. Like it can only last for a certain amount of time, right? Yeah. But they're also the most, they're the only ghost that has the ability as a strong move to regain a part of a memory without needing to go through the token and spending, right? So they're the most connected to others, but they themselves are hardly there anymore. And then there is the Return. The Return is my favorite. So Jammy secret is every time I design a game with playbooks and stuff, I always create one that is just for me, where if like, I'm going to play this game, I'm going to play this play. I want to stress, I haven't been able to yet in all playtests because this one always gets picked. So right. I just keep watching other people play it.
Yes. And if someone's playtesting your game, you feel like you have to let them choose first and the of person course. Does, and you're like, dang it.
Yeah. And it's better for playtesting because I get to see it from afar. Right.
Right. So, right.
But heartbreaking. Anyway, so the last playbook, which was built for me that I have not played yet. I will fix that soon. I'm actually like the Doll a lot of the time, the Doll and the Betrayed. But anyway, So the last one is called The Returned. And the idea is that this is a ghost that went to heaven and then was taken back. And so once again, because each playbook comes with a mystery that's up to you if you want to address or not. So there's this find a way back to heaven or leave that mystery behind. And I also want to stress that each playbook has, aside from what you remember, it also has what I yearn for. So I wanted there to be a tension, right, between the past before they died and what they yearn for right in the moment. And the Return has the following options. So this is fun because I did have all these options, but I got to add a few. But so basically for the Returned, their options for what they yearn for is to make my way back to heaven, to find out who or what brought me back, to destroy limbo and free all trapped ghosts forever, to find my stolen halo and reclaim my wings, to find a fragment of God hidden in this haunt, to find a demon and break a promise, or, and this one is my favorite, to make sure no one else gets to heaven again.
Oh.
So there's always like one option that's really like, boom, right?
It's just this.
And so every time everyone sees it and they're all just like, there's a moment of like, are they going to take it? Are they going to get that one? Are they going to take it?
Right? And so
each playbook has at least one of those things, but that one's my favorite because it speaks to the surprisingly vengeful nature of the Return. But yeah, so basically the Returned is something like of a fallen angel or fallen saint or something like that. It's up to you to figure out what that means. And yeah, it's my favorite playbook, but I think like any designer, like all these playbooks are a reflection of myself. Like when I designed this game, I didn't realize at the time that I was non-binary. Like, I thought I was cis.
Okay.
And so, but looking back at the doll now and seeing all these themes of dysphoria, you know, gender dysphoria and not right. feeling comfortable in the body. And I only realized it because all my trans friends would point it out when they looked at the doll or played the doll.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? So one of those cool things, right? You're not, you put so much of yourself in the game that you don't see it. And it yes. takes someone else to see it, to mirror it back to you. So, but yeah, so, but The Returned is my favorite.
Oh, I love it. That you're right. That last move. I mean, all the playbooks sound good. I've kind of listed them out in my head of how I want to play them, but I really like that there's at least one move where you're like, whoa, you
right?
Know, like, stop everyone from going. That is such a,
yeah, yeah. Like a nuclear option, right?
Yes, and it makes you like stop and catch your breath and think. And it's so cool that one move, one thing you wrote makes people like stop for a second and be like, oh, I have yeah. to process this.
Right. Yeah. And then once people choose that option, which some people have, it gets really interesting how they push towards that option, like what they think it means, like blocking off heaven forever. It's really, right. it's super fun. And then, you know, of course, like any game, you can change your mind. I haven't come across someone changing their mind though, but at the start of every session, I say, you know, if you want to change anything about your yeah. character, like what they yearn for, what they're, you know, that's totally doable. But people have, the ones who've chosen that have held on up to the bitter end. It's been very interesting. So some games have ended really dramatically when a return chooses that option.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I want to ask you just a couple of basic questions about the game. One being, how many players is it for? What's the range?
Ooh. Yeah. So you can play as few as two players. Okay. Right. So it'll become super intimate and it's always just the two of you. Though mm-hmm. I do want to stress that you also, when you create a playbook, you create all these other supporting characters. And so at the start of every scene, because the flow of play is at the start of every scene, you decide who's in the scene, who are the main characters, who are the supporting characters. So you can always set aside your own main character and then become a supporting character for someone else. Like, for example, The Returned, one of their possible bonds, that's what they're called, the supporting characters, is a silent angel who lives in the attic, right? And so someone can decide, okay, I'll play the angel in the scene for you, right? And yeah, so it can be as few as two. I find that once you hit six, it can be a little unwieldy because there's so many characters, there's so many supporting characters. That being said, if this is like a long-term game that you're playing that you just play every so often,
right?
And BOB is very good for that. When you just feel like jumping in, because you don't need a game master, you don't need to plan anything ahead of time. So it's very easy to just pull out, like if a game falls through, and then you can play one of this game instead.
Right.
Yeah. And that applies to a lot of Belong As I Belong games, which is why another thing I love about the system.
How long, I've know that you've mentioned like playing several sessions or not. So is this a game that could be a one shot and a campaign, or do you feel like it plays better as in multiple sessions versus one?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question. I think, do you remember like back in the 90s when the anime OAV was super popular?
Yes.
And basically it was just an advertisement to get the manga, right? But I like how a lot of those OAVs, they would introduce like a really explosive beginning or mm-hmm. like in the middle of the story, right? And so it would touch on all these ideas, but it wouldn't go through all of them in the OAV, because an OAV is only about 2 to 4 episodes usually, right? Yeah. So I feel a one shot of Our Haunt is the same, where it's, because it's very easy to create characters. You can create characters in about 30 minutes. And if you do it before you meet up and just leave the relationship question that connects you to other players for last when you show up, even faster, right?
Okay.
So it only takes about 30 minutes to make a character and your room. And then you get to play. So usually at the start of the session, you decide, what do we want to focus on the session? At the start of the scene, you sort of map it out a little bit and mm-hmm. then you play it out. So one session can be really satisfying in that anime OAV kind of way, because you get to see all the characters, you get to see some cool things happen, but there's a lot of like, oh, and then what happens next? It can be nice, because there are a lot of times I watch an anime OAV and I still enjoyed it, even though there was a lot of questions left unanswered.
Right.
You know, floating in the air. And yeah, but that being said, it really does welcome like long-term play. It feels very comforting to keep coming back to this house,
right. Yes.
And seeing how it shifts, like seeing the memories as they grow. So I am proud of our haunt in that both forms of play are valid and very, very fruitful, right? I have a lot of other games that work best as just a one shot or work best as just a long-term mm-hmm. game, but our haunt, and once again, I have to stress, this is the power of the Belong Outside Belonging system, though there is a lot of design muscle required to like create those pick lists of those options where both will shine, right? So right. When I was designing it, I'd be like, I want this to be able to be something that people can do within a one shot, but then I also want to create another option where it's more open to long-term play, where it will mm-hmm. take like several episodes in a TV show, basically.
I'm curious, because I know based on things you've said during this chat, and then also just knowing you as a designer, I know that emotion is really important. It appears that emotion is really important to you in gaming. And as someone who really is drawn to games that invoke emotions and players who want to play emotionally or explore that at some point, I'm curious what type of experience or emotions you're hoping folks will have.
I think first, when I design games, when I invite emotion in the games, I have to also write from a very emotional and vulnerable and open space, right? I feel that the players can only get as emotional as I will be, mm-hmm. right? So like, no joke, I have like teared up or cried while designing my games.
Yeah.
Like I can point out to specific things in games. And so, yeah, in our haunt, that is also true. Actually, when I think about it, the playbook that made me cry the most while I was designing it was probably the Faceless. I felt the most for the Faceless, this yeah. poor. Yeah. And so basically what I hope for mm-hmm. when people play my game is they will feel what I was feeling when I made the game, when I created the game. And I'm so happy to say that I have heard people, because our haunt has been around for a while. I released it some time back, more, I think it's close to 2 years ago at this point. And so I've been really lucky to hear people, even with just the first edition, when I was just a baby designer, still feeling things out. And, you know, it was my first time at VOB. I still have people who really spoke to the experiences I was hoping to cultivate. So a sense of melancholy, a sense of yearning, a sense of hope mm-hmm. that is made brighter because of the despair around it is what I'm hoping people will have. And in this newer version, I've also like introduced like more thrills, because there's some options that feel a little more dangerous compared mm-hmm. to some of the options you can choose. And for example, each room has something that can happen once every session, the room can blank, right? And so just to read through one of them, I'm going to talk about the garden. The garden is one of my, it turned out way more creepier than I thought a garden would be. So that was, every time you play tested in the garden, people are like, what is happening? So in a good way, I hope in a good way. So each room has the same first move, which mm-hmm. is offer proof of the life. I'm sorry, this is once per session. So each room has the same once per session option. The first one anyway, out of three. And the first one always is offer proof of the life we once lived. Describe an object tied to the past of one of us when we were alive. Ask one of the others, how is this object related to your past too? If they answer, they receive a token. So we go back to that found family and connection, right? And this is true for every room. So you can always find something that's connected to your past. And then the second one is something that's very unique to the room that can only happen in that room. Mm-hmm. So for the garden, it is, show us the parting soil as bleached bones come through. Describe how something or someone unearths themselves. Ask someone, what will the bones wear as flesh instead? Mm-hmm. If they answer, they receive a token. And then the third one, and this is usually when the thrilling, dangerous part comes in, is there's always like a kind of group or entity that will show up, right? Specifically only in this place. So in the garden, describe how the living come, demanding their due. Most of the living choose to not see us, but they want something from us all the same. Ask someone who loses a precious object to the living, how does the loss change our haunt? If they answer, they gain a token. Right. And so that's already kind of dangerous, but then depending on the room, like the basement is way more dangerous, understandably. We know bad things happen in the basement. So just for example, that same last option, it's describe how the thing in the walls comes demanding its due. It is ancient, it is hungry, it is full of pain and anger. Ask someone who feeds the thing in the wall with their emotions or memories. What happens next? If they answer, they gain a token.
Wow.
Yeah. So basically, but also because we play together, Kristen, I think you recognize my GMing style where I ask my hard GMing questions, but it's just designed into the game.
Yes.
So, yeah. So that's also another place where I come from is that I design games based on how I run games or play games, right? Mm-hmm. And very reflective of my experience and how I enjoy games. So,
yes. So before we jump in to details, whatever you can share, of course, on the Kickstarter campaign, I did hear that Possum Creek Games is going to be publishing Our Haunt. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm so lucky to be working with Possum Creek Games. So Possum Creek Games, they make absolutely phenomenal games. Absolutely love them. So Possum Creek Games is Jay Dragon, no pronouns, and Ruby Lavin, she, her pronouns. Mm-hmm. And so Jay Dragon for Our Haunt is the project manager and Ruby Lavin is the art director. So the two of them, they approached me first and asked if I wanted to work with them, which I thought was wild. So, wow. And it, actually it was Jay who picked out Our Haunt because Jay and I have loved each other's games for a long time. I'm very, 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 very lucky to call Jay a friend. But I was also too shy to ask to work with Jay.
Sure. You know, I was like,
yeah, you're too cool for me. So, but I'm just over here watching you shine.
Right.
But yeah, so it was Jay who brought up Our Haunt and that felt really special to me because I love all my games, but Our Haunt was so, so, so special to me. And I really wanted an excuse to come back to it. Right. And so Jay talking about publishing Our Haunt and I got really excited and I was like, I can work on a second edition. I can update this game with all the stuff that I've learned so far. And so that's been really awesome. So, and it was actually Jay who, because Jay has this like superpower, right? Where when Jay reads through a game, Jay can just completely understand the most important themes and aspects of the game, even without playing it. I don't have that ability. I need to play a game to like really fully understand and have an opinion of the game or understand how it flows. But with Jay, most of the time, Jay doesn't need to do that. It's just like, just this brain.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those sounds make sense, right? So,
completely.
Absolutely. So, when Jay was looking at the game, Jay was like, you know, I know in your original version of the PDF, like the art, the photos you picked out were very scary, very evocative. But when I read this game, I really get the sense of found family and queer relationships and connections. Do you want to have art that reflects that more? And Jay showed me two different styles, right? Jay and Ruby went over the artists together and they brought a list of artists to me, like a really long list, I want to say. Not too long, just enjoyably long. And Jay was like, okay, so this is what Ruby and I think in terms of he wants to stick to the creepy side. And this is if he wanted to be a little more found family. And so I was like, you know what, Jay, you're absolutely right. I really was going for found family, but you know, at the time I could only go to unsplash.com and get what free photos kind of worked with the game and that's it, right? This is the humble itch.io indie life, right? And so I only started being able to buy art and commission art for my games this year, right? So it's very new. Yeah, it's very new to me.
It's exciting.
And so, yeah, it's super, gosh, because like, I'm going to resist talking about it for too long, but basically I feel like art does so much to bring to a game, right? They bring so much to a game. I feel like artists are like one of the many unsung heroes in the game space, right? And so basically we went over artists and my first pick actually was Habil Firdaus, who is he, him pronouns, and he's from Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And he has this beautiful, like his art is kind of like, it feels like a storybook, kind of. Like there's a way that it feels very liminal that was very interesting and very sweet and very cozy, but there was still like a bit of an edge to it. Very hard to describe, right? But when Jay and Ruby handled this entirely, like they just send me the pictures. Yeah. And I just really want to say how much I trust Jay, because once again, Jay and Ruby, they have such amazing insight into what a game is trying to be.
Yeah.
And I think this shows in all their games, right? Like Wander Home really understood that, right? That connection between art and game. And so to have our home, you know, get somewhat similar treatment is amazing. And so basically the art, like, Habil has just done such an amazing job. Like the watercolors are so haunting and the characters are so beautiful. And I got to see his process, like as he was finalizing the art, like The Betrayed is one of my favorite art pieces that Habil did, because like it's the Betrayed is so cute, right? And so pretty and so lovely to look at, but they also have like a knife sticking out of their chest. And they also have this plastic bag that's wrapped around their head because their body was, you know, like it creates this like,
yes.
And I have to stress, because I'm from the Philippines, right? And that is a very Asian thing that happens like in places like Malaysia, Singapore, not so much here in the Philippines, but in Malaysia, Singapore, when someone is murdered, they're usually like wrapped up in a plastic bag and like thrown aside. Right. And so, so to see that, but to see the sweet smiling face, like it just it really brought so much of The Betrayed, like such nuance that I couldn't have done just with words, right? So the art is absolutely gorgeous.
Okay, I do want to ask you about the Kickstarter for Our Haunt, of course, but last question before we do that, you have another game that is crowdfunding right now. And I have been lucky enough to play it, but I'd love to have you tell the audience a little bit about Cozy Town, because it's just such a cozy, good feeling, warm game. And I will stop talking about it now so that you can.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The Cozy Town is also one of my earlier games. And it's also based on a system, a game that Avery Alder has written. So that's another
interesting.
It's based on A Quiet Year, which is one of the saddest games. And I thought to myself, what if I made it really, really cozy instead? And so Cozy Town was also an Itch.io game jam game. So the challenge of the game jam was to create a cozy game, because there was a discussion of what coziness means and why games are always about violence and high stakes. And a lot of my games, once again, are Blades game, you know, I naturally gravitate towards that as well, like violence and high stakes. So this was a huge, huge challenge for me as a designer to make a completely cozy game instead. And I'm so glad, because Itch funding is really exciting. It is something that's happening purely on Itch.io as a alternative to Kickstarter, because and this is the thing I have to stress, I normally don't have access to Kickstarter because I'm from the Philippines. And so there are actually very few countries that have direct access to Kickstarter. And so Itch.io is a really good opportunity. Like it was a way for me to be able to commission art and also commission other writers such as yourself, right? So the folks at There Is Super Geek. I know that the magic of indie TTRPGs is that you can have amazing games that are only made by one person, and that's really great. But I really love collaborating with people. And I think a lot of the best indie games also come from collaboration. And so the Itch funding helps that. And so I'm so happy to say that we're doing really well. I have because we blew through our initial humble goal, like within 24 hours. So then So after talking to other people for Itch.io stretch goals, the highest goal is set at $2,500, which is for an audiobook version by Aaron Catanasaez, he, him pronouns. And he is a voice actor and co-creator of the All My Fantasy Children podcast and part of the Skyjacks Curious Call Actual Play podcast. Aaron is absolutely amazing. And yeah, if we hit $2,500, we can record an audiobook version, which felt so perfect for Cozy Town. I forgot to say what Cozy Town is actually about. So it's about creating this cozy town. and playing out the whole year, going through all the seasons. And it's really just this wonderful, sweet time of like saying you choose what happens in the town, what events you're preparing towards. You draw cards to see, to build upon prompts that you're given to say what happens in the town. Everything just focuses on this lovely, cozy experience. And it just felt like it made so much sense to have an audiobook version, because then you could have, you know, you could just play the prompts and then you can listen to it. It'd be so like, it has a storybook kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And Cozy Town is a game that's very popular with families, really popular with children, which I'm so happy about. I feel like designing for children is a whole skill unto itself.
Yes.
And so I'm just amazed that Cozy Town has been so popular. I'm really glad that I had this opportunity to itch fun. And you're so close. We're like currently, as of this recording, at $2,355 blows my mind. So we're so close to $2,500.
Yes.
And yeah, so if you want to check out Cozy Town, we have some actual plays where you can see Kristen and I play together, which is really awesome.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We had an amazing game with cats and pigs and, oh my gosh, and Mariam, they had like the most amazing puns, and Jeremy had all these amazing characters. They were so awesome. Yeah, it's a great game. So it's a great actual play. Definitely should check it out. And I'd love it if you could check out Cozy Town and consider. And even if you just want to check, you want to pick up one of the free community copies, because every time someone buys a copy of Cozy Town, they get a free community copy.
That's lovely. Okay, so let's hear anything that you can share about the Our Haunt Kickstarter.
Yeah, so basically the Our Haunt Kickstarter, it's going to be a shorter Kickstarter. So we're only going to go for about 2 weeks instead.
Okay.
And it's a fairly humble Kickstarter. We don't have any stretch goals aside from just increasing everyone's pay. And because the game is completely written, right? So by the time the Kickstarter will be done, everything will be edited, laid out, and all that stuff. And so it's a very humble Kickstarter that just focuses on getting the game into people's hands. So I think we might have a few stretch goals, maybe in terms of production values and stuff that Jay and Ruby will handle. And we're also going to be able to work with Dominic Dickey, he, they pronouns, and he'll be the editor for Our Haunt. And aside from that, we have some really cool reward tiers. I'm very happy that we have a low income level tier, so you can get the PDF cheaper, right? If you, this is intended for low income and or marginalized members of the RPG community. That's always so important to me, to always have a low income level tier, because as someone from the Philippines, you know, I can absolutely relate to needing that tier. Right. And yeah, and aside from that, we also have, I'm really excited about the merch that is going to be available with Our Haunt. I don't want to spoil too much, but some of it glows in the dark.
Oh so, my gosh.
I mean, I don't know if you could do it, Ruby, but like things should be able to glow in the dark, right? So super excited about that. Actually, aside from that, there is also an opportunity to get the art. So there'll be prints and stuff, which I'm really happy about, because the art's really gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's really, really lovely. I'm going to be glad that people will be able to get prints of Habil's amazing artwork. That being said, I think my favorite reward, which we're allowed to share because Jay posted about it on Twitter, is the doll, which is the highest rewards here. At this tier, I'm just going to read it out from the Kickstarter. At this tier, we will acquire a genuine haunted doll from somewhere in the world and send it to you alongside everything else, clutching tight onto your copy of Our Haunt, along with the merchandise mentioned. Be warned, there are only 5 haunted dolls ready to carry your book to your doorstep.
Oh my goodness.
So when Jay suggested and asked what I thought of this reward tier, I was like, yes, haunted doll. Yes, absolutely. And also personally, it's just really cool because the doll is the playbook I've always played. So like 90% of the time, I'm the doll in the playtest. So
it's perfect. I love, my favorite part of that is that it's clutching tightly to your copy of the game.
Can you imagine? And there are only so many. Your doll will be different from everybody else's doll. It will have its own specific ghost in it, and it will look different. So from the other dolls. Yeah, I'm just super excited about that.
That's amazing. And when do we have a go live date yet for the campaign?
The Our Hot Kickstarter will go live on October 12th, meaning we're going to end around Halloween, which I'm super, super excited about. Another fun fact, I love Halloween so much. I got married the day before Halloween and had a Star Wars wedding. So a Star Wars Victorian wedding, actually. Anyway, so the Kickstarter will end around Halloween, right? So that's super, super exciting.
Jamie, thank you so much for joining me to talk about Our Haunt and also to talk about Cozy Town a little bit. Before we completely end and say goodbye, can you please just tell folks where they can find you on the internet if you would like to be found?
Oh yeah, please come find me. So you can find me on Twitter at Temporal Hiccup. And I like to post a lot of Sailor Moon GIFs, and it's a good way to keep up with all the games I'm working on. I'm very lucky to be able to work on so many games with so many cool folks. So the best way to keep up is through Twitter. And you can check out my games at temporalhiccup.itch.io. But lately, for the past year or so, I've spent more time in development and in playtesting before releasing it on itch.io. So if you really want to see what I'm working on, the best way to do so is to support me on Patreon, which you can do at patreon.com/swordqueengames. For the last few months, I've been sharing videos where I talk about like my game design philosophy. I created a pick list on a video recently just so people can see what my process is like. It's been a lot of fun. And I also talked about Our Haunt. I did a designer commentary, kind of like a director's commentary on the DVD, right? For the first edition of Our Haunt. So you can check that out. And all my latest games, as I playtest them, as I design them, are released there. So yeah, that's where you can find me on the internet. I'd be so happy to meet you. And yeah, come say hi anytime.
Thank you so much to our listeners. As always, we will link the Kickstarter information in the show notes. So please go check it out. This episode is probably coming out just a couple of days after the Kickstarter has gone live. If there's any dolls left, you definitely rush over there and collect your haunted doll as soon as possible.
Hello, it's the Amber at the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. This is the segment now where I say thank you, Kristen, who you can find on Twitter at KristenIsNoJedi. She has been helping me out with so many Tabletop Babble, Tabletop Crowd episodes. Without her right now, I don't know what I'd be doing. We would probably have silent episodes of me just crying. No, JK, I wouldn't ever air that. That's for my Patreon only. So speaking of Patreons, Geekspective has one. If you want to support the network, which I co-own, it would be very, very helpful if you would become a patron. We've got some cool things over there, like my GM prep for Shapeshift and other outtakes and other show stuff. And yeah, you get some sweet end of the year merch depending on what tier you subscribe to. Also, just want to say, go to geekspective.com to check out all the other shows on the network. There's a lot of great stuff going on right now. My stuff, unfortunately, has kind of come to a halt, but I am working on that. I'm trying to get the energy. It's going to come back, I promise. All right, cool. Thank you, Kristen. You probably will never, ever hear the end of this, but you guys should all tell Kristen if you listen to this episode. Thank you. Just shower Kristen with love. That's at Kristen at No Jedi. Okay, bye. See you next time. Bye. Bye-bye.